Hello and welcome to another edition of the Marlena program. This is the program for the week of March 3rd. Holy moly, can you even believe it? We've got a fascinating show for you tonight. Stay tuned, and we'll be starting in just a minute. So buckle your seatbelt, put your feet up, get comfortable. I'm Marlena. It's great to have you with me. Well, good evening, everyone. Good morning, depending upon where in the world you, where in the world are you? Wherever in this great world you are, good evening or good morning. We are going to have a fascinating show tonight. So let me get to the housekeeping details here first. If you are listening to this program at any time between the hours of 8 and 10 in the East and 5 and 7 in the West in North America, or on a Sunday night, or on a very early UTC Monday morning, then you are listening to a repeat, and we want you to put your feet up and enjoy the program. And as you folks know, we are listened to at many hours, many times around the world. But if, however, you are listening live, and again, those hours are 8 to 10 Eastern on the Sunday night and 5 to 7 Pacific in North America and 1 to 3 Universal on a Monday early UTC morning, you got us live, and the number to call when we open the line will be, as always, 866-666-7926. I'm very excited about tonight's show. Sabria Tenbruggen knew from about the age of 14 that her life and heart and vision and future lay in the mountainous regions of Tibet. She studied Asian studies and Tibetology at the University of Bonn in Germany, which is her country of birth. After working for a semester with her Opticon, she devised the first Tibetan Braille alphabet to better enable herself to complete her own studies. After graduation, Sabria set her mind and energies into establishing the first school for the blind in Tibet. She traveled alone into Tibet and into the frozen Himalayas to find blind children who were considered to be demonic by their culture, to establish a school where she could teach them the skills that they needed. Their training consisted of learning to read Tibetan, Chinese, and English Braille. They learned mobility skills and techniques of daily living and a lot more. Her book is fascinating. It is called My Path Leads to Tibet, and it is available from the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, both at the two digital sites, the digital download and web braille sites, and you can also request it in hard copy braille or on cassette. After opening the school in Tibet, Sabria and her work partner and her life partner, Paul Cronenberg, established a fascinating organization called Braille Without Borders. And I've been on their website, braillewithoutborders.org. And one of the fascinating programs that she'll be telling us about tonight is the International Institute for Social Entrepreneurs. Now, I don't want to spend too much time introducing Sabria, but I do want you to know that when Sabria learned that most of my audience were folks who were blind, she was absolutely overjoyed and was very, very willing to stay with us for most certainly, if not all, of the show. She's an absolutely fascinating woman, and I know that When you read her book, you will agree with me on this assessment. I laughed at the humor. I cried at the touching moments, and I raged at the injustices she endured, but I also celebrated her successes through that book. It's truly an honor to bring Sabria to this program. Sabria Ten Broeken, 2006 Mother Teresa Award winner, and 2005 a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. Let me bring you in now and welcome you to the Marlena program. How are you doing, Sabria?
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for this introduction.
Oh, well, it's so hard when you have to read Braille and turn the pages and not make them make noise. Now, you're in New York right now, is that right?
Yes. Oh. I'm here because of the release of this new film called Blind Sight.
Yes. And I definitely want to talk about that. But let's back up a little bit. And, of course, I know lots about you. I know everything you shared in your book, which I just cannot tell you. I have not read a book that so moved me in quite a number of years. Could you, though, for the benefit of the listening audience, tell folks just a little bit about you?
I'm blind. I'm totally blind since the age of 12. I was sighted and then later partially sighted with age 9 or 10. Maybe it started very, very slowly, but steadily I became blind. So I used to go to a regular school with sighted children, and then at a certain point there was, I couldn't do it anymore. The people didn't know about Braille, they didn't know about magnifying glasses, and it was really, really difficult. And especially the friends I had, they turned away, they didn't like to play with me anymore, and the teachers, they thought I'm kind of awkward and funny, and they talked in a kind of baby voice to me. So I was really, I was not happy in the school anymore when I really became blind. And so I decided to go to a special school for the blind, and to a very good one. And there, I had a good training in lots of languages and in Braille, of course, and mobility. And we had lots of sports activities, which was great. Yeah, and then later I decided to start my adventure to Tibet.
Now, tell us what started that adventure. How did you ever get this idea, first of all?
Well, I wanted to go to developing countries, and I wanted to travel. I also wanted to travel on my own because, you know, if you're traveling with a sighted person with you, a lot of times the people don't react towards the blind person. They always talk to the sighted person.
Yes. That
really went on my nerves, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes even when people see me and Paul, they talk to Paul, you know? And then they ask Paul, does she want sugar in her coffee or something like that? And then I said, well, she can speak, you know?
Good.
And she wants sugar. But and this doesn't happen to me when I'm traveling on my own. When I'm traveling on my own, the people really have to connect to me directly. And so that was one desire I had. The other thing was I wanted to get out of Germany. I had the feeling that people had difficulties with me being blind and maybe having having in mind on my own and maybe also being creative or I wanted to do something on my own and people didn't really believe in that, and therefore I wanted to go away. I wanted to start something new, something where I was useful, where my creativity could be used. And and then a teacher of mine, he told me, why don't you go into developing work? And I thought, that sounds really good. So I went to Red Cross and I went to Caritas and all these aid organizations, you know, the NGO work. And I asked them, well, could you think about sending me to the field and working with me in the field? And I said, oh, no. It can never work like that, because we can never send a blind person out there, you know? I mean, we have much to do to help the people, so we cannot help you. And then I thought, okay, then I had to start my own organization. And then with my own organization, I had to send myself into the field. And, yeah, that's why I came to the point that I had to learn a language. I had to be informed about a culture which is interesting to me. And Tibet sounded just fascinating, and it sounded adventurous enough and a challenge enough for me. And then I decided first I study Tibetology, and then with the special knowledge of Tibetology or of Tibet, I go to Tibet and start something. And exactly like that, it worked.
But it wasn't that simple, really. Your book is just the first chapter of your book. You grab your readers by being aboard the horse. Now, I can't remember the horse's name, but you're riding through the mountains on this horse, and people are calling to you, Khalsan Metu, which is your Tibetan name. Come back, come back. And Khalsan Metu doesn't go back, does she?
No. Well, the problem at that tour was, that was actually at my first tour when I came to Tibet. I decided to go to Tibet on my own, also to demonstrate that a blind person is independent. And in this way, I wanted to convince the people that I could start a project. And I decided to go on horseback through the villages. And I put together a small caravan with horses, and then we had quite some experiences, first of all with blind people in these villages, and very, very sad experiences, I must say. There were blind children that were tied to a bed, they were hidden away, some of them they were just sent to the street and to beg, and I probably could only know about these things because I went on horseback. So I didn't go to the villages that were normally reached by cars and by civilization, but I really went to the very, very remote areas. And sometimes there were no villages around, so we had to cross high passes in really dangerous weather to go from one village to another village. And that was one village where I really just said, no, we have to go. So I just tried to push my horse forward and over this pass. And the other ones, they were really scared, but they just followed.
Were you scared?
No. I'm normally not a very, how to say, fearsome person. Normally I'm shaky afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I found out afterwards how difficult it was and how dangerous it was. Then I start to think, or then I start to understand, you know?
Yeah.
But beforehand, I always think that there is a time when you need all your energy and you need all your alertness. And you cannot be afraid. You cannot sit there and just be afraid of something you don't control in this moment.
So you found several blind children, and then you came back to Germany to get funding for the school. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, in Tibet itself, I went right away to the governmental departments with my cane, and I said, well, I have these and these experiences, and I had quite a lot of experiences with parents of blind children, and they told me about how they think that blind people cannot do anything, and I wanted to show to the governmental people in the governmental offices that blind people, well, we are capable of doing something. You know, we are capable of reading and writing, and we are capable of overcoming blindness, of starting to understand that blindness is nothing to be ashamed about, you know, and that we can jump up in society and we can just say, hey, come on, guys, I'm a valuable member of society, and I can be an equal member of society. So that's exactly what I explained to the people in the governmental departments, and I think they were just too shocked or too speechless to throw me out. they were just giving me, opened the drawers, and they gave me all the paperwork that I needed to show to the German government that yeah, that I'm welcome back and that I could do this project. And that's exactly what I did. I went back with these papers. I went back to the German government and I showed them the papers and it looked really good. I mean, they couldn't read a thing because it was all Chinese, but it had a lot of stamps on there. And I just told them, well, they want me and I want to go back and I want to I want to start this project. And the German government immediately decided to help me out for the startup period, which was great. However, the real problems, they started later.
So you went back to Tibet, and tell us about the first. I know the school had two locations, I think, in the book. Tell us about that first location when you encountered Lapsang and what happened. I thought that was a fascinating.
Yeah, I think I have to go a little bit back because on this first trip I also met Paul.
Yes.
Maybe that's also important.
Yes.
Paul is from Holland and he's an engineer. He's actually sighted. He had never anything to do with blind people before. So I was the first blind person he actually met and talked to. And Paul was always very, very interested in what I wanted to do and my plans. And he was basically the only foreigner that didn't think that I was totally nuts, you know, when I told him about this project. And he said, well, give me a call, give me a ring, and maybe we can do something together. And I didn't really, I mean, people talk lots of things, you know, I mean, yeah. When they get excited, yeah. they talk lots, but then the question is, are they really into it, or are they really interested to do it? So, however, I had his address, I called him, and just 1 week before I left back to Tibet, I called him, and he was a manager in a service park in a bungalow resort in Holland. And I told him, hey, Paul, I'm leaving next week. I just want to let you know because you were interested in this whole thing. So I just, I just want to say goodbye. And he didn't say anything. And I said, well, Paul, you don't have to cry or something. Just wish me good luck. And he said, no. I come with you. So next day he quit his job. And
wow.
1 week later, to the big surprise and the big shock of his parents, who were wondering why is he running off with somebody he hardly knows. I mean, and then a German, I mean, for a Dutch.
For
running
God's
off
sakes.
And then a blind lady on top.
Oh, you know, my God.
And things like that. And then to such a far away place, like Tibet, and he's losing his career, he's losing his pension plan and whatever. But still, he decided to do it. He quit his job, and 5 days later, we sat together in the plane. And since then, yeah, we started the school, and we first started it with six children, whom I found on my track on this horseback trip in the first year, and we started first in an orphanage outside of Lhasa, and then was very, very, very difficult. I really must say, I didn't think so, because I thought this principal of this orphanage is interested to help blind people. But yeah, I found out that he was actually mainly interested in the money I brought,
yeah.
And the money was was disappearing. And Paul had a second job. He got a second job in the Red Cross section. So he had to go for a few weeks to build some buildings there, and I was totally alone. And then I said, hey, could you please help me to get the furniture that I bought with my money? Could you help me to get it into the rooms? And then he said, yeah, well, we lost the key for the room where the furniture is in. And if you could see, you could just look through the window and then you would see all the furniture, because they found out that I was not really believing them. So they were railing. I mean, they were cheating, you know. And I felt cheated, but I was not sure. And then Paul came and I said, could you just have a look in this room? And he saw nothing, you know. I mean, it was just totally empty. So that was horrible, I must say, to be totally alone, and I that was the only place where we stayed, or where we could stay. And luckily, we got out of that.
Now, I want to move onward. But one of the things that I loved about your book was the way in which Paul's personality is portrayed. And you know, it just sounds like, in addition to being your rock, and I don't mean that in a dependent way at all, but I mean, you know, you would get down and out when things would get tough, and Paul would just be like, ah, come on, come on, we're gonna make it, we're gonna do it. And, you know, I was so touched by how you portrayed Paul. And when you finally got to the point in the book where it was very clear that he would be your life partner, I found that very interesting, because what he said to you essentially was, Sabria, let people love you. I love you. And that just really threw you a bit, didn't it?
Yeah, I must say. I was a single fighter, you know. It never really occurred to me that people just... of course, I mean, I had boyfriends before that, but either they wanted to be my boyfriend or they wanted to do something with me together, but not both at the same point, you know.
Yeah.
And that threw me a bit, I really must say. But he went through so much, and at first, I mean, he went through so much to be with me in this very, very difficult beginning of this whole center. And and at first I thought maybe he thinks I cannot do it, or maybe he pities me, or maybe he wants to patronize me, or something like that. You know, you sometimes have these doubts. Being a blind woman, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, there are men who maybe try to take advantage of that and say, whoa, now I have this this little power thing. And he was not at all like that. I just misinterpreted that.
Well, and I think that's easily done by blind women. My husband is sighted. He happens to be disabled. He uses a wheelchair. But even still, even in the very sort of beginnings of our being together, those little thoughts went through my mind very faintly, but I would sometimes think, well, why does he want to be with me? And then I had to really stop myself and say, because I'm damn good and I'm a good person. That's why he wants to be with
exactly.
me, and I have to let it happen. So
yeah.
I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. It's a team.
Yeah.
It's not just that he substitutes my eyes or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a team. It's he always say, "Hey, why do you do this to yourself? I mean, you don't have to do everything alone. And we have different talents, we have different energies, we have different characteristics. So why don't we celebrate these differences and put all these different energies together, and then we can do something much, much bigger together." And I think he's so right.
Is he on this tour with you in the States?
Yeah, he just came yesterday from Tibet.
Oh, my gosh.
I was longer here. I was here with five blind Tibetan teenagers,
uh-huh.
which was very nice, but also quite exhausting, I must say.
I bet.
We traveled through the whole states, and I had to give them some time to reflect also and to talk it over and what they experienced, and that was very interesting. Now they flew back to Tibet, and Paul came from Tibet to do the tour with me together.
Let's talk a little bit about why you're here. You, in 2004, kind of hooked up with a guest who's been on my show, Eric Weinmeier, who summited Mount Everest. And how did this all happen? Eventually, you and six of the kids and Eric and others did a trek. Tell me how that got started.
Well, I have heard of Eric's attempt to Everest, or of the plan that he wanted to climb Everest a few years before he actually did it, and I really crossed my fingers all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not a mountaineer. I couldn't care less, you know. For me, normal, I mean, sighted people who are running up Everest, I cannot really, you know, I cannot really understand this whole thing, standing on top and waving the flag. But for him, I thought it was so important, or for us blind people, it was so important that a blind person could do it, you know, and could show the world what a blind person is capable of. So I really was so into this whole plan, and I crossed my fingers. And then when he made it, we heard it actually through BBC in Tibet. There was a neighbor running into our center, and he told our kids, and our kids were so fascinated, because Everest, of course, Jomo Langma is the Tibetan word of Everest, and it's a very, very holy place for the Tibetans, and that a blind person managed to stand on top of Everest was, for them, their own victory, basically. And we had these discussions. Shortly before he climbed Everest, we had loads of discussions about blindness. They wanted to stay forever in the project. They wanted to not go out anymore because they were fearful of sighted people, because blind people really have tough life. Of course, not only in Tibet, but also in Tibet, you know. And some of them, they faced a lot of difficulties. A lot of people are throwing stones at them and things like that. So they were really fearsome, and they, especially, they didn't want to walk with a cane. And I told them, after I have read the book of Eric, I think it's Touching the Top of the World.
Yes, yes.
After I've read that, I told them about Eric's difficulties as well, how he became blind and how he was embarrassed at first, you know, not wanting to show with the cane that he's blind, and not wanting to read Braille, and how difficult he, how many difficulties he had in the very, very beginning. So they started to really understand, hey, there are other blind people in the world as well who have similar difficulties and who have similar obstacles to overcome. And we were sitting there and we thought, we want to invite Eric. If he comes to the Himalayas, why shouldn't he come to us first, and then he exchanges with the students, and then he can do whatever he likes to do, you know, climbing more mountains. And that's what I wrote to him. So I wrote him a long, long letter. I told him about our kids and about the histories of our kids. And, well, some of them, they lived on the streets, and some of the other kids, they were hidden away. So they have quite some tough lives. And Eric immediately, he answered back, and he was touched, and he said, I want to come. I definitely want to come, but I just don't want only to exchange with the students, but I want to do something with these kids. And then his plan started to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and suddenly it was a 23,000 feet peak next to Everest. It's called the Little Brother of Everest. It's Lakpari, Stormy Mountain. Yeah, and suddenly there was a film team and the whole Everest team, and I had to decide who's going on this trek from our kids. It was very, very exciting.
Now, did you go on the trek as well?
Yes.
You did?
Paul and I, we went together on this trek also.
Oh, my gosh.
Because we wanted to be with the kids. And we wanted to share and to reflect and things.
Well, you know, sometime privately you'll have to tell me which kids went, because I feel like I know these kids now that I've read the book.
Yeah, you know some of them. In the first book, there is Jensen, for example.
Uh-huh.
He came very, very soon. Keela is pretty
yes.
much in the end of the book
yes.
with her twin brothers
yes.
that are also blind.
Yes.
So Keela went on the track, Jensen and Tashi Pasang.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Tenzin.
Oh, and I was Tenzin was my favorite.
Yeah, and Tenzin is on the cover, for those who can see. He is on the cover of the book.
Tenzin was just you just had a feeling that child had spirituality that tells you that he's sort of a very old soul.
That's right.
Oh, I was very, very...
That's right. And if you see the film, you feel the same. He's such a philosopher, or he's really, I mean, he has such a bright, bright mind, and Yeah, he's a thinker. I really must say.
All right, we're going to take just a quick break here for a couple of spots and announcements. And when we come back, we'll talk with more with Savria, and we'll also open the line so that you all can talk with her as well. And, of course, the number to call is 866-666-7926. And if my computer cooperates, by golly, we're going to hear a couple of promos, and we'll be right back. And we wait and wait.
Or do you know someone who is? If you answer yes to any of these questions, then the American Council of the Blind can help you. We are blind and visually impaired people from every walk of life who work together to enhance our lives. For more information or our membership application, call 800-424-8666 or contact us online at www.acb.org. The American Council of the Blind, forging new frontiers for our future.
This program is brought to you by HumanWare, advocates for Braille literacy and manufacturers of the Braille Note M-Power. For more information on the Braille Note and other fine HumanWare products, visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call HumanWare at 1-800-722-3393.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll-free, 1-866-666-7926.
Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. All right. Gosh, we got all that out of the way. Let me push the button and bring Sabria back. Are you still with me?
Yes.
Oh, good. All right. You know, we have our first call. Let's take our first call, and then I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk about Braille Without Borders. And you're just a very fascinating woman, so you have lots to share with our listeners. Let's bring the first one in. Hi there, you're with Sabria and Marlena. Who's this?
Hey there, this here is Danny.
Hello, Danny. Say hello to Sabria.
Hey there, Sabria.
Hi, hello.
I've got a quick question, and what I will do is I'll hang up and listen to the answer and
all
give
right.
others a chance.
All talk. Right.
I read somewhere, and I forgot where I read it, I regret, but I read that in the Chinese language that I read that someone in the, I think it was either the 50s or 60s, invented a relatively simple Chinese Braille code that works with what they call not traditional Chinese, but the modern style Chinese, but that somehow the Chinese Braille Authority or whatever it was, after trying it, had rejected it. Do you know anything about that?
No. My focus field is more the Tibetan language. Our kids, they learn the Chinese Braille system, and the Chinese Braille system is all over China pretty much the same as far as I know. It's based on phonetics. It cannot be based on the characters, but it's based on phonetics. And they're reading whatever other Chinese children in Braille institutes are reading. I'm concentrating more on Tibetan Braille. I have invented the Tibetan Braille, and that was my focus point.
And you know, and we do have another call, so we're going to ask the caller to hold on just a moment. But that was a fascinating part of the book. Now, I did read the book because I wanted to read it really quickly, because I wasn't sure if you'd come on, and I decided that if I put all my positive energies into this, that I would be able to hook up with you, and you would be right where you are at this moment. And so I read the book on the Victor Reader Stream, which is a sort of a little device that is it's MP3 capable, and you can speed it up. And so I sped it up quite handily to get the book read completely by the time we did this show. But the way in which the narrator managed how you developed the Tibetan Braille alphabet was really interesting. And it sounds like you just sort of sat down and thought it through phonetically. Is that accurate?
No. Actually, the Tibetan Braille system is really not phonetically. It's one by one translatable. It's really based on the Tibetan syllable script. So in Tibetan, Tibetan script is different than Chinese script. Chinese script is based on characters.
Uh-huh.
Tibetan script is syllables based on the Sanskrit.
Ah, and, okay.
You have, about 30 consonants. So they go like, ga, ka, ga, nga, ja, cha, ja, nya, da, ta, da, na, ba, pa, ba, ma, and so on. And then you have, consonants which are written above, so superscripts, and subscripts which are written below the main consonant, and then you have vowels. And of course, in Braille, it's very, very difficult to staple them above and below.
Yes.
So I had to find a method to put them all in a special order, so that the order is always the same, and that Tibetan black print can be totally translated one by one, exactly translated into a Tibetan Braille system. And I used actually the spelling system. The Tibetan has a very, very interesting and fast way of spelling. So, for example, maybe shall I do one example?
Yes, please.
Yes. Okay. One example is Gyebo Chembo. That's the big king, yeah, or the emperor, is spelled in the following way. And in this way, all the superscripts and subscripts have its own place. So you hear where the superscript comes, where the subscript comes. And I created this Braille system in a way that I could type with a Braille typewriter along with a very, very fast dictation. So our students now who know this Tibetan Braille system much, much better than I ever knew my own system, and they go to regular schools also after they complete our center. They go to regular schools and they type with their typewriters what the teachers are dictating to the students, also to the sighted students. And sometimes they're much, much faster than the sighted students. So if the teacher doesn't have time enough in the end of the lesson, he just concentrates on the blind students so that the blind students write down what the teacher says.
Wow.
And then in the breaks, they turn to the sighted students and dictate it to the sighted students. So this gives them a big advantage.
What a feeling of empowerment that is. We have another call. Let's bring our caller in. Hi there, you're with Sabria and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, are you speaking with me?
I am. Who is this?
This is Angel.
Hello, Angel.
From Cleveland, but I wanted to ask you, if one wanted to, you know, had the credentials and all, like in teaching adaptive equipment or in teaching Braille or rehabilitation credentials, could one apply and get a job from you and perhaps go over there and help teach the students?
Well, Angel, you know what? You are an angel, because that leads us directly into Braille Without Borders. So I'm going
to... Would one go up to that? To that website.
Well, you know what? Why don't you hang in here, and I'm sure Sabria is going to give you an answer that you might like.
Thank you.
All right. So there we go.
Everyone can visit the center. This is no problem, and you can also stay and play with the kids. The problem, however, is with the working visa. You can either be a tourist, or you have, or you get a working visa. So that's for Tibet a little bit difficult to get, I must say. However, if you are interested to work for the blind in general in developing countries, we are starting a new Braille Without Borders Center, the International Institute for Social Entrepreneurs in the south of India, where we want to teach highly engaged and motivated and talented, mainly blind and partially sighted people from all over the world, who think about to set up their own schools maybe, or to help other centers to grow bigger and to become successful. It's mainly really for people who have a vision, who are visionaries and who have a lot of energy and who say, hey, we don't have to sit just on our chairs and be served by the society. We can also do something for society, and we can help society to grow and to improve. So maybe if you're really interested to work in a developing country or to help in developing projects, maybe that would be a study for you.
I looked at the Braille Without Borders entrepreneurial program today, and boy, I said to my husband, you know, if I went away for a year to teach, would you miss me? I didn't quite get an answer, but oh, it's such a worthwhile endeavor to either teach in the program or learn from the program. And I would encourage folks who are interested in working in developing countries to look at the BrailleWithoutBorders.org site and check that out. Now, how do you have the facility set up, the physical facility for the Braille Without Borders?
We're just now in the end stage of buildings. It's a beautiful building, I really must say. It's going to be really, really nice. At the lake, we have a part of the lake belongs also to the property. There's a big park, and it's very quiet. It's very it's good for a very, very intensive study. And you can swim, and there's going to be a boat jetty where we have some kayaks and rowing boats. And but on the other hand, it will be also quite tough, because we are going to have the best teachers who were working, or we don't want to call them actually teachers, we want to call them catalysts. So people who help other people to jump out there in society and to do something, you know? And these teachers are catalysts. They are coming from businesses. They're all in leadership functions, or maybe in NGOs or in film and theater. So and they will teach management, project planning, fundraising, basically everything somebody has to know, public speech, for example, how to work in media, how to do interviews, how to be interviewed, but also communication skills, like how to work with your staff and how to communicate conflicts and all these kind of things. And it's a very, very practical study. People just don't do it in theory like in universities, but they have to do projects from morning to evening, and they have to go out there, and they have to work in orphanages, and they have to provide their skills, which they have learned in our center, or maybe which they have learned in other places as already. They have to provide it to other NGOs and then come back to the center and learn more. And so it's a very, very practical way of teaching visionaries to really realize their dreams. So it's a kind of a dream factory.
Yeah. Where did you get the idea for Braille Without Borders? It would seem to me that you know, once you got the school up and running, your little idea bank, which you had to be so creative so many times during that process, it would seem to me that your little idea bank would say, would you give me a rest, please? I'm tired.
Well, actually, this whole idea of Braille Without Borders just developed really throughout the project and also through our kids. I mean, they gave us so many ideas. And especially, of course, Braille for us, Braille is a very, very important thing. So we wanted to have Braille in our name, in the name of organization, and in the foundation of ideas, because we still think that Braille is the method to literate blind people worldwide. Of course, we have speech synthesizers, which is great, and we have talking books, which is wonderful. But still, I think it's not really the substitute for literacy of blind people. But that's our opinion. Without Borders, of course, means that we don't only have to focus on blind people in Tibet, but that we also can concentrate on our concepts to spread out our concepts worldwide. But also, we don't want to set borders or boundaries or limits for blind people. And so we want to give blind people the methods and the techniques, and so that they find their own boundaries and maybe even overcome these boundaries. And I would like to give one example why we got this idea, or we developed this idea through the input from our children in Tibet. We sometimes do this dream factory. We call it a dream factory. And we talk to our kids about their future dreams. And that's mainly because in the very beginning, they were afraid of their future. They thought, oh my God, if I'm going out of the center, then future is really dark and everything is terrible outside, of our center. And we thought, how can we give them the fun? How can we give them courage to jump out there and to embrace life? And then we told these kids, we said, okay, think 1 week, one intensive week, you have time to think about your most beautiful, beautiful future dream, and think and paint it as colorful as you can imagine it. And don't think of your limits. Don't think about, oh, I cannot do this, I cannot do that. And just think about what you really, really want to do. And then we do this also with the little ones. And there was one little one, Norbu, 8 years old, and he came and he had this dreamlike smile on his face.
I remember Norbu, yes.
And he came and he said, I want to become a taxi driver.
Yeah.
And well, Paul just says, well, you just look at the taxi drivers in Lhasa and they're all blind, you know. what to say to this little guy? You know, he's 8 years old and he wants to become a taxi driver. But then with 10 years, he came back and he said, you know what? I cannot become a taxi driver because I'm blind. But I can start and run a taxi company.
Wow.
And that's much better, isn't it?
Wow.
And this is why we came to the point, no borders for the blind. Give them the opportunities to find their boundaries, to find their limits, to find their obstacles, and maybe they even have a chance to overcome these obstacles and then make a change of paradigm, to transfer the bad image of being blind into maybe even a chance, you know, and maybe something wonderful.
The telephone number to call is 866-666-7926. My guest tonight is Sabria Tenbruggen. She and her life partner and professional partner, Paul Cronenberg, have established a school in Tibet and have subsequently gone on to establish an organization called Braille Without Borders. And you can check them out on the web at braillewithoutborders.org. Where do you get your Braille materials from for the school in Tibet?
Well, mainly we print them ourselves. We have a computer. We have now even blind, our former students, actually Gyenzen, you know Gyenzen,
yes,
from the
yes,
first book.
Yes.
He's brilliant. I mean, he got a scholarship for Malaysia and he learned all about Braille printing and he came back and he's doing the main Braille printing. So they are, finding volunteers from university, from the Lhasa University, and they come with their school books for the regular schools, and they dictate it to the blind people, and the blind people, they're typing it very, very quickly into the computer. Then they lay out the books, and they print them. So we have printed books in Tibetan, English, and Chinese. That's the languages. Our students are all trilingual, so they all have to speak and write and read three languages.
That is just amazing. You know, here in the United States, we most of us are pretty monolingual.
I certainly
can.
You have Spanish.
Well, yes, but you know, if I had to rely on my Spanish, I'd probably die a very quick a very quick death, and the same with my French. So I'm always very, very much in awe of people like yourself and your students who have more than one language so nicely to hand and can speak in and converse well with folks in more than one language. We have another call. Let's bring them on in. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Sabria. Who's this?
This is Kelly Sapurja.
Hello, Kelly Sapurja up there in, let me get it right now, Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Canada. You know, Sabria, there's a beer here in the United States called Moose Drool, and I keep getting Moose Drool and Moose Jaw mixed up, but I got it right tonight. Sabria must be my good luck. Go ahead, Kelly, meet Sabria.
Hello. Hi. I just wanted to say that I actually have your book, My Path Leads to Tibet, and it wasn't from the National Library Service, but I think someone from the CNIB read it, but I am really enjoying it. I'm especially impressed with the descriptions that you have in there, like when you were listening to the monks praying, and that was just excellent, because I always wondered what that would be like.
Well, and you know what I'm laughing at on that portion. I'm laughing at how when Paul came over to you and gave you a can of Coke, and the sound of the Coke opening just reverberated everywhere.
Yeah, the Coke was exploding in the middle of the of the meditation.
Oh my gosh! And you know, Kelly, I am going to let you ask your question, but I don't want to forget to say this. Another part of your book that I so could relate with was where you talked about, and I don't have this marked up, so forgive me, I'm going by memory here, but you talked about how we blind folks see things, and you gave the analogy that, you know, you thought you were horseback riding by a beautiful brook with leaves on the path, and where you actually were was at a sawmill plant, and the beautiful brook was a mucky stream, and the leaves were just bits of wood blowing off the path. And, you know, I really do believe that one of the things that we as blind people can embrace and should embrace is our imagination and the way in which we picture the world around us.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It truly doesn't.
No, exactly. It doesn't have to be total reality.
No. No.
Maybe our reality is much more beautiful.
I gave a talk once back in the 70s where I talked about my vision of a sunrise and what that meant to me. And at the end of my talk, I said, you know, so, you know, based on what I've just told you about my sunrise, who can say whose perception of beauty is greater? You know,
exactly.
We have to celebrate ourselves. But anyway, go ahead, Kelly. I'm taking your time, and I'll shut up and let you talk.
That's all right. Actually, I was just wondering, when your students are writing Braille, what do they use? Do they use, like, a slate and stylus or a Perkins Brailler?
They use slate and stylus, but they also use... Yeah, it's a machine which was originally produced in Germany. It's the Marburger. It's a little bit smaller than the Perkins, but more wobbly, maybe.
Yeah.
And now it's produced in China. Hmm. However, we are still looking for a better one, for some machine that is more stable, but also not so heavy as the Perkins, and especially not as expensive, because we cannot afford Perkins brailers.
Yeah, the Perkins brailers are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They sure are.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Kelly?
No, I don't think so.
Do you read Braille?
Yeah.
Yes, great.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
In fact, I think it was last year I passed a Braille writing course from the CNIB, Mastering Literary Braille, it's called.
Uh-huh, great.
That's right.
For Braille transcription or proofreading or instruction, that sort of thing.
I remember that well, Kelly, and I remember that you got the Marlena Show Bell of Salute for doing that.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Quite the struggle, but well worth it, I think.
Oh, gosh. You know, without Braille, when the batteries die, what have you got? In my opinion, if you're totally blind and you can't read and write Braille, and I get in trouble for saying this, but it's my show and it's my opinion, darn it. But really, I believe that if you are totally blind and you cannot read and write Braille, you're functionally illiterate.
Yeah, that's exactly what our students say. We had two students that went to England, and they had a scholarship for actually a program in a sighted or in a school for sighted Europeans who wanted to learn English. So they learned with sighted students, and they also wanted to visit a blind school for an afternoon, and they asked me whether I would like this idea, and I thought, oh, maybe they go there and they see all these technical things and they feel inferior or something like that. But then anyway, they went just by themselves with their canes, you know, from one city to another city in a totally different country, and they just started, I mean, to really understand the UK accent. And then they came to the school, and they were, of course, very surprised about the techniques and the computers with the speech synthesizers and all of that. But nobody was reading Braille.
Yeah.
The students were not learning Braille anymore. They could handle it for marking their CDs, but they were not reading Braille essays. And then this boy, Nima Wangdu, who comes from the east of Tibet, where nobody is reading and writing in his village, his parents that raised him could not read and write, and he comes to UK, to Europe, Tibetan boy, stands in front of a class of blind children, and he says, you know what, if you don't read Braille, you are illiterate. And that was
good for
quite
him.
Amazing, I thought,
good for
coming
him.
From a Tibetan blind boy who really comes from a place where literacy is a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Kelly, any more?
Yeah, I was just going to comment that as far as I'm concerned, you know, reading Braille is a lot better than speech synthesis because, I mean, you know, like I have a Braille display on with my computer, and I'm just always, you know, amazed at, you know, reading, like, you know, all these errors and stuff that the speech doesn't pick up right away.
Yeah.
You know, and having to have it spell everything out individually, it just, I don't know, it just doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, sir, well, you have a good one, and thanks for listening up there in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Canada.
You're welcome.
I'm going to send you some moose drool someday. You just wait and see.
Okay,
take care, Kelly.
Yep.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. It's just about the top of the hour where we are and wherever you are. And remember, if you're listening to this at any time now, other than between 9 and 10 in the east, 6 and 7 in the west, on a Sunday night in North America, or 2 to 3 on a very early UTC Monday morning, then you are listening to a repeat. We want you to put your feet up and enjoy. If you're listening live, you can do as the person I just put on hold has done and give us a call at 866-666-7926. I just want to make one more comment before we bring our next caller in. I am very fortunate, Sabria, to serve both the American Council of the Blind and here in Washington State, the Washington Council of the Blind, as their secretary. And I couldn't do it without Braille. You know, yeah. I couldn't do the editing. I use my Braille note, or I use my Braille display, and I couldn't do it without having Braille. So I just want to carry that theme on into our next hour here and bring in our next caller. Hi there, you're with Sabria and Marlena. Who's this?
Well, I guess that would be me.
Oh, Roger, hello from Palo Alto, or thereabouts.
Mountain View, that's close.
Mountain View. Well, you know, come on. I move people all around, you know.
Yeah, I was telling somebody that it's a 10-minute local bus ride from here to Stanford, so it's really pretty close to Palo Alto.
Well, there you go. You're giving us information that we will carry to our graves. What's up, sir?
Well, let's see. There are so many things. One is my comment on your saying that, you know, that we should revel in our own definitions of reality made me think that I have a tenuous enough grasp on reality that I don't think you should encourage me that way. But.
Oh, well, I exclude you from that comment then.
Yeah.
I know you well, and I do exclude you, actually.
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard the whole conversation because my mommy called me to dinner.
Oh, your mommy.
During the program.
I don't think your life partner will appreciate that. So.
but anyway, I wanted to mention that I am a member of the International Relations Committee of the American Council of the Blind, and I'm also a member of the board of the Braille Revival League. So it seems to me both of those bodies need to figure out some way of relating to Braille Without Borders. I've always been interested in the whole issue of Braille around the world. You know, I guess probably Judy Dixon at NLS is the person I know that knows the most about different Braille codes and so forth. But I don't know exactly where to go with this, but I think that
maybe you can make the link.
I'm sorry?
Maybe you can make the link.
Well, maybe so. I think that both the Braille Revival League and the International Relations Committee are, and there's some overlap of membership, too. So,
well, I think it would be fabulous, if not this year, maybe next year, to bring Sabria to our convention.
Yeah, really.
I mean, and have her as a part of the program where, you know, she can speak to 1,300 blind people in a room. I mean,
yeah, really.
You know,
more blind people than you ever saw before. yeah, I wanted to ask, Sabria, did you go to school in Marburg?
Yes, yes. Do you know the school?
Anstalt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know the school?
Well, I was in Germany once, and a long time ago, in 1974, actually, I got to do the Checkpoint Charlie thing. Go to East Berlin, and met with Dr. Helmut Pilasch, who was the head of the East Berlin blind stuff. One of the things I wanted to ask you when you're talking about Braillers is, whatever happened? Do you know what happened to the Picht Brailler, which was the Brailler
the
whole Eastern communist bloc used?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was made in East Germany, I think.
It's a great machine, actually. It's really nice because it's very, very small.
Yeah.
And still existing. We received two Picht Braillers for Tibet.
Uh-huh.
And they're actually quite nice, I really must say.
Yeah. Well, I know that
it's still expensive, though.
In East Germany, they had I mean, obviously, things weren't optimal there, but they certainly had that Zentralbücherei that they had in Leipzig and so forth produced some nice things. I saw some really wonderful raised maps that they made.
Yeah, and
I hope they haven't gone away.
Yeah, no, I hope so too. I mean, the Leipzig library is still there.
Uh-huh.
I will find out about the Picht Braille. However, it's still sometimes we are thinking of trying to figure out a new prayer machine, which is, you know, not easily breakable, especially in developing countries where you can just fix it with any kind of tool, and where you don't have this huge knowledge how to fix a Braille machine. And my boyfriend is right now trying to think about a new way of making Braille machines,
with daily tools.
Pardon me?
I have a friend named Ralph Hotchkiss who is a wheelchair user. He teaches at San Francisco State, and his claim to fame is that he has designed wheelchairs to be made out of things that are available in the third world, and practical in the third world, like made out of bicycle parts and so forth.
Maybe wonderful.
Something like that needs to go on. Huh?
How can I stay in contact with you? You seem to know the good people.
Marlena knows where I live.
Yes, I know where Roger lives.
Wonderful.
I can definitely put you two together, and Roger has lots of good ideas and lots of good resources. And,
well, I'm so old. You know.
Well, I was going to say, besides that, he's an old codger. He's even older than I am, if you can believe that.
Oh, my God.
I know, it's a scary thought, Rog, but you know what? Hey, what can I say?
All right. Well, I'll let you go now.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and tell Bernice I said hey.
Yeah, nice meeting you.
Yeah, nice meeting you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Roger. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. You know, one of the problems with doing my show, Sabri, is sometimes I get so involved in what people are saying that I lose my own train of thought, which has just now happened. when we talked, I told you I was no professional, but alas, we have a caller who will rescue me. Hi there, you're with Sabri and Marlena. Who's this?
Rescue you? Heck, I would, if I could, I would gladly see you on the chopping block.
Oh, listen to you, Mr. McElroy.
Oh, it's true, it's true.
Off with your head. I
delight in seeing people destroy their own shows.
Off with your head.
Okay. However,
yes, back to reality
back
now.
Back to reality.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. You were talking about imagination before.
Yes.
And I think you're mixing up two very important concepts. Now, I don't say neither one of them are wrong, but I think you're mixing up the two. I think, you know, perception is one thing. Imagination is quite another. And I think that perceiving the environment around you is very, very important. Like, when I go cross-country skiing, which I do, you know, I used to do more often than I have done the last few years. You know, I can feel the snow under my skis. I kind of have the sense of freedom and the trees around me. I don't really need to know at that point, as a blind person, and I don't know if you would agree, I don't really need to know what color the leaves are. I don't really care. It doesn't matter. It feels nice. So, of course, I fall on my face, which happens all too often when you ski. Then you get a reality check.
Yeah, then you're back to reality.
Yeah. But I think now, for example, I can sit here and you know me and driving. You know, I happen to be very much my feelings about not driving as a blind person in the developed world. It's really a problematic, but you know, I can imagine myself in a driver's seat of a BMW, but it's not going to happen. I can't make it happen no matter what I do because I can't see.
Right.
I mean, I can do what I have done. I can drive a vehicle around a parking lot. I've done that certainly, but I can't. You know, how do you? I guess my question to you both is, how do you translate imagination into something that is indeed workable, that can happen?
Sabria?
Ooh. Now, first of all, I agree with this difference between perception on one hand and imagination on the other hand. However,
two very constructive things, both of them.
Yeah, but for example, I must say I'm a very visual person. It has to do with with the point that I was cited before, and I was a very visual person back then. I used to paint a lot. I liked to go into museums as a kid already, and so I really loved to see, you know. So still, my visual cortex seems to be pretty active. So everything that happens surrounding me, I have the feeling that I still see. Some other people have the same thing. So I don't really know what is just put together by, or which picture is just put together by my other senses and just put into my brain as a visual picture, or what is actually imagination. There it's getting very, very confusing for me, of course. Then if you just think of imaginations, when you're reading a book, you imagine things. So when you're starting to dream about your future, you imagine things. Or when you are seeing yourself sitting in a driver's seat of a BMW, then you imagine things, of course.
I didn't say VW, I said BMW. It's quite a different...
BMW, sorry.
Okay, now, I can see what you're saying, and you know, and maybe that is the difference between us, because I saw more than I do now. But I don't know how much more. I remember seeing, like, I could see lightning flashes in the past. I don't think I could now, for example. But I still enjoy, I very much enjoy the freedom of, for example, cross-country skiing or horseback riding or even walking in the wilderness. Those things definitely fill me. And I, you know, again, I will say that I don't get maybe the same exact thing that a person that can see, gets. But I certainly do not derive less, I would say that.
I agree with that, Dave, and I would turn that around and say that a person who can see doesn't get the exact same thing as you do.
Exactly.
Well, it's like when somebody asks me, well, what do I look like? Well, I have a picture of you, but it might not be the picture
exactly
that's real. Yeah. Now, that I'll go with you on, you know. It might not be the same.
Sometimes
although the very physical characteristics might, the length of hair, height, that sort of thing is probably right there. But the nuances would certainly not be, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes people ask me, well...
But so what?
Yeah, I know.
Well,
so
that's
what?
Right. That's what I said. So on. Okay. Now, on to another point, because we want to get... otherwise, we could beat this horse for a long time. And there's been another small Braille device put out. I have not personally seen one. Pam, my life partner, saw one a few years ago, and it still needed some development, called the Jota Dot. Has that come to your attention at all?
No, not
okay. Ah. It's a small Braille device that will actually it will. The only problem that I could deal with it doesn't type. It doesn't write its Braille on regular sheets. You know, you have to have special size sheets. And I think
that's a problem.
But it would be a problem. And again, the cost, it was supposed to be cheap, but, you know, cheap compared to what? It's about the same cost as a Perkins Braille Writer was, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I think
which
it's around...
to me is not cheap. Yeah. It's not like the Slayton Stylus, which you...
I think it's around $250.
Yeah.
Oh, that's still too much.
Yeah.
Do Slayton Styluses, are they viable for your...
We have all of our kids have Slayton styluses, but of course you're faster with a Braille typewriter.
Darn straight you are, but then again I'm probably faster with a typewriter computer keyboard than I am with any of that stuff.
Yeah, that's of course.
But of course that's not going to happen. I think there needs to be something out there that, you know, of Slayton Stylus price quality that would provide reasonable Braille on an 8x11, 8.5x11 paper. That seems to not exist yet. I don't know.
Seemingly not. I mean, my boyfriend right now, he's really looking around in the whole world, and he tries to find people also who are interested. So if somebody is listening in and is interested to work with him on these devices, he's a mechanical engineer, so he can help to figure out ways how to do things. But it would be nice if somebody has already done something
I also
in this
think
direction.
That one of the real issues, and this is an issue with Braille, as you undoubtedly know, as a Braille user, Braille, large quantities of paper Braille are so large that they in Congress. That's why we have refreshable electronic Braille. If that could be made more less expensively, then that would also be a help, I think, to people.
But first of all, we need something which you can use in places where you don't have electricity.
True, exactly.
And of course, the refreshable Braille is something. It's something highly advanced.
But
so
if you don't have
something
you
like
don't
that breaks down in the developing countries,
no,
then it's
no,
very
I
difficult
agree with
to
you.
Replace it.
Or
yeah.
Or it would have to be solar. That would be the other alternative.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck. Thank you
all
so
right.
much.
Well, thanks,
thank you very
Dave.
Much.
Take care. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Well, I found my train of thought. Fortunately, it didn't stay lost for too long. Can you, going back to the school, can you tell us, there are so many touching stories in the book about those first children who came to the school. Could you share? I know we've sort of briefly touched on a couple of the kids, but could you maybe tell the listeners about one of those children in particular, and then maybe what they're doing now?
Maybe I tell you about one of these children who are also visible in this film, Blindside.
Yes, great.
This film, Blindside, is exactly about this expedition which we made together with Eric Weinmeier. And the children, the six children, are portrayed in Blindside. And also not only the children the teenagers, how they are doing now and how they accomplish their dreams, but also their histories. And this is, at first, maybe people might be depressed and think, my God, this child has a lot of bad luck in his life. But in the end, you see how they fight themselves back into society. And this is actually a nice thing also about this film. It's not a sentimental film, but it's really a film that gives a lot of courage also to sighted people. Maybe we talk about Gensen. You know Gensen.
Yes.
Right? Gensen is actually a very, very special case. Gensen was sighted before. He comes from a village where a lot of people don't know how to read and to write. His parents were never in school. And he was discovered to be very, very bright when he was 7 years old. So the teachers from the neighborhood village, they came, they begged to the parents, please, please send your child to the school because he's incredibly smart. So the parents were not really interested of sending the child to school. And at that time, the child was sighted, you know. So that they thought, okay, yeah, he better helps in the mountains, you know, with the goats and the horses. And he was a good horseback rider, and he was helping a lot. And so they were not really interested to send him to school. And then he came to school after, a lot of discussions with the parents. He came to school, and it turned out that he is very, very intelligent, and that he could read and write and calculate long before the others of his class, his classmates, could do. So when he was about 8 or 9, somebody gave him a scholarship for the time when he would turn 10 for a school in Beijing. And the school in Beijing would be a school for very, very talented students from Tibet who would be trained in a special way. And then when he turned 9, he became blind in only 3 weeks. He became blind through a kind of an eye infection, which very often happens because people, they burn dried yak dung, and the soot is laying down on the cornea. And when they ripe, especially when the kids, they ripe with their dirty fingers in their eyes, it can get to really bad infections. And if there's no doctor around, they cannot do anything. So he became blind in 3 weeks, and the parents, they thought he's cursed, that there's some kind of demon that caused that. And they were hiding him away because they were ashamed, they were embarrassed, they didn't want him to, or they didn't want him to show or to the village people that that he had this infection. And so he was hidden away for 3 long years until people found him. There was a developing organization that found him in the village and that heard about him, and they took him to the school. And at first he was a very, very difficult kid. I mean, imagine being hidden away for 3 long years and just in the dark, you know. He was not able to play with other children, and he was scared of other children too. And this boy now, I mean, he gained so much self-confidence. He was the one who got a lot of courage when I told him about Eric and how he overcame his shame and embarrassment to walk with a cane in the inner part of the city. You know, when blind people walk with their canes through Lhasa, they very, very often the nomads, they shout at them and they say really bad words like Sharao, Shargo, which means blind fool. And he never really wanted to go out there and wanted to face them. And then suddenly, after he heard of Eric and he heard of his overcoming, he could face them again, you know, and he could he went out there and he said to the nomad who was shouting at him, "Hey, do you speak 3 languages? You know, can you read and write?" And then he turned to this nomad who was just shouting blind fool at him, and he turned back to him and he said, "Well, can you read and write in the dark?" And of course, it made him totally speechless. And this boy now, I mean, he came with us to the mountain, which gave him a lot of confidence, I really must say. And also meeting Eric, exchanging with Eric. And now in this summer, last summer, he went all by himself to Malaysia to enter a computer course. And he was never out of Tibet. He was never flying. And he did it just by himself. You know, he went to Malaysia. And of course, there he attended this computer course. Then they went all together, they went to Japan, and he saw blindsight the first time, and he had to do a Q&A, you know, like question and answer, He was just by himself on the stage, and there were like 500 people, And they're sitting there, and they're clapping, and they're asking lots of questions, and he answered all these questions, and then we got a mail from a Japanese woman who wrote us, "Well, this boy, he stood just alone on the stage, and later he was surrounded by beauties, by Japanese beauties who all wanted to talk to him, and he just acted as an international gentleman." And this is, you know, this is a story which gives me a lot of courage, which gives also sighted people a lot of courage. And this boy, you just have to get to know him. I mean, he's just filling your life with a lot of joy. And he shows you that, yeah, we don't have to sit depressed somewhere. We can just jump out there and we can be happy and we can do whatever whatever is in our limits and maybe even beyond our limits.
Always stretching our limits. That's how I try to live my life. And, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt once said, if I can get this quote exactly right, she said, "Do something every day that scares you." And I think about that a lot. We have another caller. Let's bring him in. Hi there. You're with Sabria and Marlena. Who's this?
I'm Marlena and Sabria. This is Kelly from up in Leavenworth.
Leavenworth, Kansas.
Yep.
Hi, Kelly. Do you have a question for Sabria?
Well, first of all, if you guys start chopping too many heads, some head chopper might wind up near my town.
Oh, dear. Well, we'll be careful about that one.
Well, think about it.
That's true.
I'm surrounded by all these jails and prisons.
That's true. That's true. Kelly's surrounded by prisons.
do you have
a question?
My comment is that, well, first of all, I'm trying to, I'm winding up having to somewhat block out smidgets here and there of what I'm hearing you guys talk about from the book, because I just started reading it,
and
then my braille note went dead.
Oh dear. Well, it'll be there for you once your braille note gets fixed.
I know it will.
Yeah.
It's needing is a recharge overnight.
Oh, well, that's not so bad.
All it's needing is a recharge overnight, but still, I had time to read, and it said his battery was low. That was just unimpeccable timing.
Well, plug it in and read.
I could, but where I plug it in is a not easy spot to read at.
Oh, Okay.
Especially when I have Miss Bell who says, I want to be where you're reading, Mommy.
Oh, okay.
My kitty likes to be right where I'm reading.
Yeah, yeah.
But my comment is, hearing you guys talk about all this, I'm going, wow, because it's reminding me how much we take for granted what we have here in this country for us blind folks to use and learn every day.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
It's what I keep getting reminded of.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these guys are using, from what I'm catching on, they're using Slate and Stylus from the get-go, you know, from the start.
Yeah.
Whereas I had to talk my vision teacher into teaching it to, you know, into letting me learn it when I was 12. And she goes, well, there's really, hey, come here, you.
Yeah, you can ignore your cat and finish your sentence.
I had to pick her up or else I was going to trip on her.
Okay.
But I had to talk her into it, and she goes, well, there's really no use in learning it anymore except for label making. Guess what? I keep in my purse now.
And your vision teacher was probably sighted, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So, she, of course, is the great authority on whether there's a use of your Slate and Stylus, because she's sighted, right? Yeah.
Well, I thought she would be at the time anyway.
Yeah.
I hadn't ran into a whole lot of blind adults yet, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's,
well, good
that's,
for you for standing up to wanting to learn that. Good for you.
I stuck with it, and I'm so glad, though, that I know the Braille, because... And keep your kids learning it, because yeah. I use my Braille every day on my job. If it weren't for the Braille display of my Braille note, my boss wouldn't. It'd take me longer to read my messages back to my boss that she needs to phone call return.
Well, so. Good for you. All right. Well, thanks for calling in.
But just trying to encourage with the Braille there. Keep it up, because it's well needed.
All right.
Thank you
very much, Kelly. Bye bye.
You bet. You guys have a good night.
All right. Pat your cat.
She's gone now.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. It's about 28 minutes past the hour, and Sabria will be with us till just about the top of the hour, as usual. And if the computer will behave, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back. This program is brought to you by HumanWare, advocates for Braille literacy and manufacturers of the Braille Note M-Power. For more information on the Braille Note and other fine HumanWare products, visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call HumanWare at 1-800-722-3393.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll free, 1-866-666-7926.
You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. All right, we got everything going on here. The computer obeyed, the phone patch worked, and I'm bringing Sabria back. And we have another call. Let's bring them on in. Hi there, you're with Sabria and Marlena. Who's this?
You're speaking to me?
I am.
Hello, Marlena. This is Marilyn from Dallas.
Hello, Marilyn.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
And how is Poco?
Poco as well. Poco. She's laying right at my feet.
Poco is Marilyn's guide dog, and Marilyn's guide dog was raised by two very dear friends of ours here in Seattle. And when Poco and Marilyn came to visit, actually, Don and Kelly were on my show when I retired Madeline. So when Poco came to visit Don and Kelly, I got to meet Poco and Marilyn. And Marilyn, you are a teacher as well, aren't you?
That's right. That's
well, let
right.
me let me let you talk directly with Sabria.
Hello, Sabria.
Hello.
I came in late into the show, so I'm not sure whether my question perhaps had been answered. I mean, asked earlier, and you may have answered it already, and if that's the case, then I'm really sorry, okay? But my question is, you're in Tibet, and you are blind. Do you use a cane, or do you, you know, how do you get around?
Yeah, I use a cane.
Okay.
I use a white cane, and all our kids, they are also learning how to use a white cane.
Okay. Now, if somebody were to come to your school to help or to you know, to do teaching or whatever, and they had a guide dog, what's the situation with that?
Well, we never had somebody coming to the school in the first place
uh-huh.
to teach. And in the second place, we never had guide dogs. But, of course, if your guide dog would be able to go on a high altitude, because you have to imagine Lhasa is on 12,000 feet or more than 12,000 feet.
Okay.
So, of course, that's maybe a tricky thing. The other thing is what I said earlier already. In Tibet, it's a little bit difficult to work because of working visas.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get working visas for foreigners. So you can always visit the school, but working is a little difficult.
Yes, okay, but do you have, if somebody were to come, let's say, and be a volunteer?
You can visit the school, that's for sure.
Yes. Okay.
Now, and Marilyn, you may have missed the segment where we talked a bit about Braille Without Borders. Did you hear that part?
I think I came in maybe just as somebody was saying something, but I had missed the prior conversation, and so I'm really sorry that my
that's okay.
Overlapping.
No, it's not at all. In fact, I am going to ask Savria to tell you and perhaps others who have just joined us as well again about the entrepreneurial the institute for. You say
International
it's
Institute, International Institute for Social Entrepreneurs. So we are starting this institute in the south of India, in Kerala, and it's mainly a training center for mainly blind and partially sighted, but we also have some applicants who are sighted because there is no such center elsewhere in the world, as far as we know,
mm-hmm.
where people can learn how to start their own social project. So if they have a vision, if they have the energy, and if they have the entrepreneurial motivation and energy, that they come to us to learn management skills from highly trained teachers. I mean, they are not teachers for the blind,
mm-hmm.
but they are people who are entrepreneurs in their own lives, in their own professions, either in businesses or in NGOs or in film or in theater.
Mm-hmm.
So we are also doing stage training. We are doing all kinds of things that you need to know, for example, to do presentations, to do fundraising,
mm-hmm.
to do PR work. But of course, organizational skills. How to employ people, how to get the finances together, how to manage the conflicts in a team of this certain social project. And we are looking for talented, engaged people, 18 plus, doesn't matter whatever age, but 18 plus, from all over the world, who really want to get out there and who want to start projects. It could be projects for blind people. It could be projects for other handicapped. It could be environmental projects
mm-hmm.
or technical projects. We have some blind people who are very technical and who want to start environmental projects in their own region or in their own country, or even radio projects.
Mm-hmm.
We also try to get our own little radio station so we can learn from you a lot, from this radio program a lot. And so that there's some kind of network of social projects where people make sighted people and the sighted society understand that we exist and that we can form the world to a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you are also looking for qualified staff. Is that correct?
Yes, not necessarily in the blind section. So we are not looking for Braille teachers because these people who are coming to us, they are already mobile. They are already they know Braille. They know their skills already. Yeah, you know. So these are really it's not a a training for trainers. It's more a training for leaders. You know, it's like a leadership project, but or leadership training, but in the developing world.
And then a question, your students, do you have them communicating? Do they have pen pals? You know, Braille
you mean
pen
the
pals?
Students in Tibet?
Yes.
Yeah, the students in
the
Tibet.
The students from the Tibetan school?
Yes.
Yeah, they have some pen pals, especially now from the America trip. They were in Los Angeles at the Junior Blind, and they have been in the Carroll Center in Boston. So they met quite with some teenagers from America, and they exchanged addresses, which was very, very nice.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you now, where are you right now?
Right now, I'm sitting in my hotel room in New York because in two days we have the theatrical release of Blindside, which is by the way also a movie with audio description.
Yes, yes. And
is that going to be is it going to be on video?
Yeah, it's going to be on DVD, but a little bit later. Now it's going into the cinemas all over the country.
Because I saw a list of that, but Dallas doesn't seem to be on the list at this point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to, before the end of the program, I'm going to run down the list. I have it here. And I'm going to run down the list of the locations where the film is going to be.
I was looking through the list and hoping to find a place, but I guess I'm going to have to wait.
Well, either that or come back out to Seattle and visit us because it's coming here on April the 11th.
Oh, goodness.
All right, Marilyn.
Well, thank you so much, and this is really interesting. I'm loving, you know, I'm enjoying listening to the program, and I will look at Borders, Braille Without Borders, and see how I can be of use.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I think
www.braillewithoutborders.org is the website.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Every best wish for great success.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Oh, that was a surprise call from me. That was Marilyn, who is just a delightful person. She's working very hard to make her connections as a teacher in Dallas. So 866-666-7926. We have another caller. Let's bring them straight on in. Hi there. You're with Sabria and Marlena.
Hello there, Marlena.
Hello there.
Hello.
Is this Oral?
It is indeed.
Hello, Oral. Meet Sabria.
Hello.
Hello, Sabria. This is Oral Miller. I'm in Washington, D.C. And
we're coming to Washington, D.C. this week.
Well, that's what I'm calling about. As a matter of fact, I did not hear the beginning of the program. I was on an earlier teleconference, so I may be mentioning something that's already been repeated. If so, I'm sure you, Marlena, can tell me so. But it's my understanding, and in fact I've received confirmation on this, that the movie is going to be shown at the National Geographic on Wednesday evening this week.
Yeah.
And I have made arrangements for the District of Columbia Council of the Blind to publicize it as widely as we can in the short amount of time we have. So I'm sure a number of people from the Washington metropolitan area, blindness and low vision community, as well as the education field, et cetera, are going to be there and going to be very interested in the movie. And now, you said you're going to be here also.
Yes, yes, I will be there.
Well, excellent. Okay. Well, we'll have a chance to meet you also then.
Wonderful.
Yes.
What was your name again?
My name is Oral Miller.
Oral. Okay.
I'm the president of the District of Columbia Council of the Blind.
And a past president of the American Council of the Blind and former executive director of the American Council of the Blind. Don't undersell yourself, Mr. Miller.
I wear a couple of different hats, Sabria.
Okay.
Yes. I have a question for you also.
Yes, please.
About 6 months ago, I heard an after-dinner presentation by a professor in this country who is an expert dealing with orientation, mobility, accessible pedestrian traffic, etc. And she was speaking about assisting a school for the blind, which I think was a school in Tibet. I'm referring to Professor B.Z. Benson. Yes, this is Professor B.Z. Benson from Boston.
Now, I have met her only once, maybe 8 years ago.
I didn't know whether it was your school or another school in that part
of
the world.
Well, there is only one that's ours.
Okay.
Well, there is another one, but they don't do mobility. There is one which has mainly deaf children, and I think they have two or three blind children as well, but they have also some kind of hearing impaired, maybe. I don't know. But our center is the blind center in Tibet.
Okay. I wasn't sure from the information I had whether it was the same center where she had worked, and she had been there a couple of times.
She had been there
several years.
But several years ago.
Uh-huh. All right. Very interesting.
Seven or 8 years ago, I think.
Okay. I'd received the impression it might have been more recent than that. I wasn't sure. But I'm looking forward to learning both more about your school and, of course, learning more about the project, the climbing project and so forth for the students.
Mm-hmm.
And
great.
Their work with, or their, I won't say their work, I'll say their entire experience with Eric Weinmeier.
Okay.
Well, and Oral, I'm very envious of you because you get the movie and Sabria. I just get the movie.
Marlena, we're attempting actually to arrange, truly at the last minute, some audio description with it, live audio description.
Well, I thought that the film was already audio described.
Okay, we asked that question, but nobody we spoke to knew. The advertising agency
there is an audio description already.
There is full
I heard
audio description.
Okay,
yes, good.
I heard it. Good. I heard
we
it 1 year
sure.
ago in London.
Okay, this is built into the film, right?
Yes.
Okay.
No, it's not built into the film. You had a headphone on and it was transmitted through I don't know what kind of system ever.
Yeah, no. What I mean is. It did not require a live person present at
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so just make sure that the Avalon, which is where my list says it's playing, is capable of transmitting that audio description, and you should be all set.
Okay, it's my understanding that the Avalon, that's a later production, as I understand it. That's coming on the 15th or so?
Oh, you're right. Yes,
yeah.
yes.
It's
the 14th.
Going to be at National Geographic's on the 5th.
Okay.
And when we inquired about audio description, again, unfortunately, no one knew what we were talking about.
Yeah,
the advertising agency, of course, National Geographic's, because they're simply providing the space for it, et cetera. So it will be good news.
Please talk to the Blindside team itself and try to... try to find out something, because I think this is very, very important that this is clear, you know, what's going to happen with this audio description.
When we are done with the show, Sabria, if you have someone that Oral could contact, if you will give that to me, I will get it to Oral. I'll send him an email.
Yeah.
Will that work?
Yes.
Okay.
That will go.
Okay.
All right, Oral.
One way or the other. Well, good to talk to you, Marlena. Very good to meet you, Sabria. And looking forward
to
meeting you and seeing the film and so forth. We're familiar with Eric's work because he has worked with other student groups, as you probably know, in South America.
Yep.
And
and
well,
Australia.
Of course, is in
all over
the Southwest USA.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
All right.
Thanks much.
Take care, Oral.
Right.
Bye-bye.
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 866-666-7926. We have, well, maybe 12 minutes left. You know, the problem with doing shows on the internet, Sabria, is it's not like real radio where you start on the hour and you stop on the hour. You sort of come in and then you sort of fade away because you never quite know how long the internet transmission takes. So we sort of try to gauge it, but sometimes we overlap and then the timer comes in and cuts us off and people write me letters and say, you talk too long. 866-666-7926. What's going on at the school now? I looked on the website and I saw something about a massage clinic.
Oh yeah, we have different programs. We have one preparatory school, which is for children between 4 and 15, and they are going to be prepared for regular school, so they stay only for 2 or 3 years. So they learn mobility skills and daily living skills and all the languages they have to know and computer skills. And then they go to boarding schools, to regular boarding schools with sighted children. And then we have this vocational training center, which contains a massage clinic where talented adolescents and young adults can learn Chinese traditional massage techniques, Tibetan traditional massage techniques, but also physiotherapy techniques from Europe or Thai massage and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a training which takes 3 years. And then we have a farm. We have a farm in Shigatse, which is the next bigger city next to Lhasa, and this is a training farm, and we have a cheese factory there, so blind people learn how to make good, nice French and Italian, but also Tibetan cheese, and we have animals, so they learn animal husbandry, cow raising, horse raising, horseback riding, but also vegetable production. We have ecological vegetable production with composting and handicraft. So all kinds of professions which are needed in the Tibetan society, but on the other hand, these professions can be carried out by blind people.
And I'm sure that that's very useful. I remember reading in the book that one of the causes of blindness is the brightness of the sun in the high altitudes, and that some of the farmers who depend upon these skills for their living actually become blind. So I'm sure that this program is very useful for the adult blind of Tibet.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's very needed because there are a lot of people who become blind at later age.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have another caller. I'm going to ask the caller to turn down the computer. I can't bring you on until you turn down your computer because it's making a big echo. So if someone is listening and they want to hear your call, maybe they could just turn it down so that only they hear it. Let's bring the caller in. Hi there, you're with Marlena and Sabria. Who's this?
Hi, I'm Linda, calling you from Buffalo, New York.
Hi, Linda, welcome.
Hello. I'm very interested in this Braille writer idea. Now, I have no engineering talents or mechanical abilities, but I'm picturing sort of a rectangular, lightweight metal base with the six keys, and there would be an action, you know, like a pogo stick is to push the keys down.
Right.
You know, that same idea. And somehow there would be little styluses or little things that would act like styluses. You would lift the lid to put the paper in, and these little styluses, you'd push the keys down and they would, you know, do the Braille letters and whatnot, but it would be lightweight. It seems like you could make it cheaply, and it would be completely made from things that aren't hard to come by, you know?
Sort of a slate and stylus with keys.
But yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking about.
Because
I have two legally blind children, and their life in public school was a disaster. And just now they're getting the fever to do more reading of Braille. And I hope they get set on fire by it, because without Braille I'd be completely lost. So I just thought maybe that would be the principle that might work, you know, a lightweight metal base so that it's sturdy, and that kind of pogo stick action for the keys, but somehow with a slate and stylus inner working, where the styluses would automatically be in line with the keys to press the, you know, the make the braille sell.
Right, right.
Yeah. Huh. That's what I was thinking about.
Well, that's a good concept.
Great idea.
Yeah.
So I wish you every blessing and lots of good luck, and I hope someday I can be of service.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're more than welcome. My gosh, I'd be dead in the water without your call. This program is all about you guys, not me.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. Take care, Linda. 866-666-7926. I want to run down the schedule that I have for the movie. And Sabria, you can add to this and sort of elaborate perhaps on where you're going to be. You yourself will be this week, but I have that in Washington, D.C., March 14th, at the Avalon Twin Theater. In Boston, March 14th, at the Landmark Theater, Kendall Square. In Philadelphia, March 14th, at the Landmark's Ritz Theater. In Denver, on March 14th, at the Stars, STARZ, Film Center. In Tempe, on March 21st, at the Valley Art Theater. In San Francisco, on March 28th, at the Sundance Kabuki Cinema. In Madison, Wisconsin, on April 4th, at the Sundance Cinema. In Chicago, Illinois, April 11th, at the Music Box Theater. In Seattle, Washington, on April 11th, at the Harvard Exit. In Portland, Oregon, on April 18th, at the Hollywood Theater. Those are the listings that I have. Now, where are you going to be this week?
So we are I think these are like premieres in these special cities. So there's one premiere here in New York, which is on the 4th of March. Then on the 5th of March, we are in Washington, D.C. I think on the 10th of March, we are going to be in Boston. But I don't know exactly where about, but I'm sure people can find it out through the Internet.
Sure.
Then on the 13th of March, we are in Denver. And I think on the 18th in Phoenix. On the 11th in Philadelphia. Now, my boyfriend Paul Kronberg came in and he's whispering in my ear. 11th in Philadelphia. Yeah, that's all I know so far.
Well, and I actually wrote to Paula Davies, who's been just a wonderful helper in facilitating my meeting you, and I'm just so, so grateful to her for doing that. And I said, well, couldn't she come to see Adele in April? And she said, no, because she'll be in India by then. So
yeah, that's right.
Oh, dear. And, you know, it's so sad. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I moved away, so shame on me. 866-666-7926. It's about 54 minutes past the hour, and we really could squeeze in one last call if you called right now. Sabria, I ask this question of many folks who visit my show, and I'd like to maybe end with this question with you. What can you say to someone who may be listening, who is blind, who has perhaps given up and just felt, you know, the cards are stacked against me, the struggle isn't worth it, I'll never be as good, and so I'm just going to just kind of not try to work and just live my life and get the best that I can out of it. What can you tell that person?
It's very difficult to because people are so different and people have so different obstacles in life. So I can never really talk to or say that everyone has to do it the same way. I would always concentrate on not on the disability, but on the possibilities, on the potential we have, on what is good and what we can do in life, and what we did with this Dream Factory, also what we really want to do in life, and maybe there is a chance to find a way. To find a way around these obstacles we have and around the difficult people that we have to face. And maybe these difficulties also make us stronger and let us find a way to jump into life, to embrace life, and to see the beauty of blindness.
I so appreciate the way that you phrase that, to see the beauty of blindness, because I am a person who very much believes that my blindness is a gift and that without my blindness, and yes, there are some times when being blind is very difficult and it's a problem, but without having been given that gift of blindness, I wouldn't be the person that I am today.
Yeah, I see the same.
Yeah. Well, Savria, I appreciate so much your being with us. Have you any contact information that you might be able to share if people would like to send you an email or have
our contact? Email address is braillewb@gmx.net.
So that's braillewb@... Say the rest of
it. GMX.
GMX.
Yes.
.net. braillewb@gmx.net. And if people would be interested in donating used books or braille writers or anything to the school, can they do that?
Yeah, they can do that, and we are very, very happy about that. Mainly through the website, there will be also our address and our contact address, how to send it or how to ship it there.
Sabria Tenbergen, you are a person I'm very proud to call my friend, and I very much look forward to a time when we can sit and have tea and actually cement this friendship. I loved your book. I love your energy. And I so appreciate that you stayed with us tonight for the full show. I think that you've touched a lot of lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I'm Marlena. That's going to wrap it up for this week. We will be cutting things off here so that I don't feedback. We will not be live next week. We will actually be on tape, because we will be at the CSUN conference. So who knows what evil will lurk behind the microphones while I'm at CSUN. But we'll definitely be playing something for you. We'll be back on the 23rd of April. It's Easter Sunday. I'll be checking with our regular Easter Sunday guest, see if he's available. If you listen, you know who he is. On the 30th, we'll be dealing with voting in Monroe County, Pennsylvania. I'm Marlena. Thanks for listening, and have a great 2 weeks.
having difficulty reading the newspaper? Are you experiencing severe vision loss? Or do you know someone who is? If you answer yes to any of these questions, then the American Council of the Blind can help you. We are blind and visually impaired people from every walk of life who work together to enhance our lives. For more information or a membership application, call 800-424-8666 or contact us online at www.acb.org. The American Council of the Blind, forging new frontiers for our future.
This program is brought to you by HumanWare, advocates for Braille literacy and manufacturers of the Braille Note M-Power. For more information on the Braille Note and other fine HumanWare products, visit them on the web at www.humanware.com or call HumanWare at 1-800-722-3393.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll free, 1-866-666-7926.
You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a donate to ACB Radio link.